welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is your weekly 30 minutes of inspiration and ideas on all matters related to teaching and learning. You can listen to or download hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. This week, my guest on the programme is Professor Gert Biesta from the Netherlands, who has recently taken up a position as Professor of Public Education at Maynooth University. Gert Biesta conducts theoretical and empirical research and is particularly interested in the relationships between education, democracy and citizenship. He is the author of many books, including the 2013 publication, The Beautiful Risk of Education. I began our conversation by asking him why he had taken up a position in Maynooth.
A good friend of mine started working there last year, and he developed a Centre for Public Education and Pedagogy. And then initially he invited me to be a visiting professor there, and I said yes to that. And then I'd been commuting from Edinburgh to London for about 5 years. And I thought, that's enough, I want to work a little less. So I retired from London. And then Maynooth immediately said, can we hire you? So they offered me a part-time position to work on developing the centre. And that's really interesting.
And what is the goal of the Centre for Pedagogy and Public Education?
Well, that's partly for us to figure out. But it first of all raises this really interesting question about what is public about education, what's the public role of education, the public mission, across the whole spectrum from preschool education up to higher education. Is there still a public dimension? And then I would particularly think about the links with democratic societies and what education can do there. So it plays a bit on the public-private distinction, because you see a lot of developments in education that become just commercial or privately funded, and they serve particular interest groups, but not society at large, you could say. The public school is also the ideal of the common school, where young people meet who would not necessarily meet in other settings. So that's also a democratic dimension. So these are some of the bigger questions. And then on the one hand, there is a discussion about, do we still need that today? But also, is it still possible today? And then not just in Ireland, but this is actually a discussion happening in many countries.
It's a fascinating discussion, because in Ireland, a lot of primary schools are public or are common, you know, have a common enrollment. Mm-hmm. And then that changes as students progress through the system. But then we also have, say, a lot of students studying for grinds to get advantages in exams that will get them into college. So are they the kind of issues that you're going to be looking at, or is it the, you know, encroachment of sponsorship on education?
Yeah, these are also issues. So it's partly about, you can have the idea of public education, but then when you look at the dynamics within schools, you often find that different groups in society are not really meeting there. So yeah, we're still at the beginning, but these are some of the questions. And also for the university itself. In Britain, particularly, where I've worked for a long time, yeah, universities are under all kind of economic and commercial pressures. And then to still think about the university as a public institution, of the public, for the public, that's quite a challenge.
Given that this is your first week in Ireland, it's probably a bit early to ask you about your impression of Ireland and its education system, but how will you go about getting to know Ireland's education system and what it stands for in terms of education?
I think by keeping my eyes wide open and trying to speak to as many people as possible, asking about their perceptions. History is for me really important, so to understand the history of an education system, I definitely want to get into that. I've already been in touch with people in teacher education, and also Irish teacher education is very different from the experience in England.
In what ways?
Officially, teacher education in England is the responsibility of schools. So it's not even the responsibility of teacher education institutions. So I would say the government has really intervened politically to take teaching away from any intellectual environment and make it a very, you learn it on the shop floor. And I was talking to a colleague in the teacher education program this afternoon who was explaining about four-year teacher education programs. From an English perspective, that's unheard of, that you spend so long with student teachers to really prepare them for a beautiful and difficult job. So that's quite a stark contrast.
And you have spent time, you've occupied roles in education in several countries, including your home country, the Netherlands, but also the United Kingdom, the United States, and Luxembourg, and now in Ireland. From that privileged perspective, and probably relatively unique perspective as well, what do you see as common concerns across countries in terms of education and unique concerns?
I think there are common concerns in the countries I've worked. I've also done quite a lot of work in Scandinavian countries. And what has emerged over the past 15 years is a really competitive mindset. I think it has to do a lot with PISA measurements and measurements anyway, I think. That has changed the perception of what education should aim for. So positions in league tables suddenly become very important. And it's a very seductive logic for politicians, also because it's sort of the currency they can use in talking to the voters by saying, we'll push up our education system at the top of the league table. And I think that has affected actually what happens in education in a lot of countries. So that's really, I think, a common concern for many education systems, and it trickles down, I think, to the level of individual schools and classrooms and teachers.
Indeed, one of your books is titled Good Education in an Age of Measurement.
Yes.
So what is good education in an age of measurement?
What I try to do with that book is at least to put this question of what good education is, put it back on the agenda and say measurement can never answer that question for us. Measurement in itself is not bad as long as we measure what we value. But very quickly you end up in a situation where people value what's being measured. And then you lose control, I think, over the direction of education. So the measurement sets sort of the definition of what good education is. So I try to take that back by first of all saying we cannot escape this question, which is a question about values. It's a normative question. And then I propose a little thing where I say education is never just about sort of one thing, but actually three different agendas or concerns come together. Education is the place where you can get knowledge and skills. So that's an important task for education. But education is also the place where you meet traditions and can become part of traditions. So I also worked in vocational education, and the tradition of nursing or the tradition of plumbing, just becoming part of that, understanding what it is, but also the tradition of a modern Western society. So for me, that's a second task. And then I think education always does something with human beings as individuals. And the work that happens there for me is a third domain. And the argument I've made is that these three domains are all legitimate purposes for education, and the real challenge is to keep them in a good balance and not just focus on the knowledge and skills, or not just focus on reproducing traditions, or not saying it's just about the child and as long as children are happy we have great education. But keeping those three together is for me a good way to start with this question, what good education is.
And whose responsibility is it to keep those three together, the tradition, the knowledge, and the individual formation?
I would say it's everyone's responsibility. So at all layers of education, it's important in teaching. And some of my own work is trying to really look at, what does that mean for the practice of teaching, for pedagogy, for curriculum, to always have that triple perspective, you could say. It's a question for managing schools, that you have this broad notion. And I think it's really a question also for policymakers, partly in their definitions of quality, that they have a three-dimensional definition of quality. But policymakers also do a lot in providing the context in which education can happen. So if they say we believe in a broad notion of quality, but all the funding only goes to, what is it, driving up test scores in mathematics, then that's not really going to work. So you can say it's at all levels of the education system that people need to have a concern for this.
And is it compatible with concerns that you often hear articulated today, say, for example, about diversity or about equity? How do those other concerns fit with the three pillars that you've identified?
I would look at those concerns through the three pillars or the three domains. So if you think about equity, of course, an important dimension of that has to be in the domain of qualification with knowledge and skills. So it's really important to do that well. But as, for example, the research on cultural capital and social capital shows, even if you have all the knowledge and the skills in the world, but if you're not part of important networks or if you don't understand how those things work, then you can't do a lot with the knowledge and skills. So you can say it's a task for the school to open up all these different traditions. Then you begin to talk more about education that creates equity, that understands that social justice is a complicated demand. And what you always also want is to, that the student sort of emerges as an independent, responsible, thoughtful person in that process as well.
You've expressed concern elsewhere about the disappearance of teaching. What do you mean by that?
I think that the disappearance of teaching has gone hand in hand with the rise of learning. For me, that's part of the bigger story, that when you look at education over the past 20, 25 years, you see that learning is becoming more central. You see it in the language. So often students are called learners. You see it in the field of adult education that is rebranded as lifelong learning. Schools are called learning communities. So you see this notion of learning emerging everywhere. Part of the explanation I see is that this is a response to really top-down notions of education that say it's only about what we put in, and students just have to obey and do what they are being told. That never creates good education. So it's important to bring the student into view. And then you can say, well, what's happening at that end of the educational relationship? Well, there are people learning, so let's focus on that. But one thing that has happened in that shift is that learning has become sort of the answer to the question, what's the purpose of education? So then people say, well, it's to make students learn. I can show you the policy documents that say that and nothing more. So there I then come back to this whole question of, but what is the learning for? And then the three domains is at least one way to say, well, learning always needs to have a purpose. But the other thing that has happened there is that teachers have been redefined as facilitators of learning. And I see you cringing a little, and I also think that something odd has happened there. So on the one hand, you can say, this sounds wonderful. Let's focus on the learner, and that all the work of the teacher is about facilitating that learning. But learning is, it's an empty term, so I always
an empty
say,
term?
Empty, yeah. So and the point of education can never be that students learn. Yeah, that's silly if a teacher walks into a classroom and say, today I want you all to learn. Then students will either say, that's fantastic, so we'll have the time off, or they ask, but what do you want us to do? So that already shows that learning actually doesn't describe anything. But the facilitation metaphor also actually suggests that in that dynamic, teachers are sort of not really needed. They are there to keep an eye on what happens. But the whole idea that teaching is a very special act and a very special practice begins to disappear there. So that's partly the disappearance of the teacher. And some people are very excited about that. So I read people who say the teacher used to be the sage on the stage, and now the teacher is the guide on the side, and that sounds very benign and nice. And then a friend of mine said, well, actually, the teacher has become the peer at the rear. So you see the teacher just moving to the back of the classroom, and in all this language of learning communities, teachers become almost indistinguishable. So the real question is, what is teaching? And is it important that we try to articulate what is special about teaching that cannot be captured in the language of learning or the language of facilitation? So I've been intrigued by that question, and I've been working on answers, and I would say one important thing about teaching is that teachers can put things on the path of the student that students would not themselves have been looking for. Quite often students have not been looking for that because they didn't even know that they could look for it. So there you can say teaching is an act through which things are given to students. Of course, students should have the freedom to do something with what they are given. And authoritarian education would just say, I give this to you, but I also tell you what to do with it. And I think the giving is important, but then, yeah, students also need to do work. So that's part of what teaching is. But there is another distinction, it's quite a long answer, but I hope it's okay, that I've become really fascinated by. When you look from the perspective of the student, I think that there is an important difference between learning from someone or being taught by someone. When you learn from someone, which can happen, you sort of see things happening or you hear people talking, and then sort of you draw your conclusions from that, or something stays with you and you take that with you, or you try to make sense of it. You can say that's a direction where the learner tries to understand the world outside of him or outside of her. To be taught by someone actually goes in the opposite direction. That's where things come to you that maybe you didn't ask for or that you were not looking for. And I think that also is part of what happens in education, that on the one hand, students can work very hard to enhance their own understanding or get more knowledge or skills. But there is another direction where things come to us, and sometimes we don't notice them. Sometimes we do notice them, but we think, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Or there are things where we say, well, actually, this comes at the right time. And for me, that distinction is a bit, begins to disappear in education. If we only focus on learning, where the learner is always in the center and tries to understand and make sense. And I think this is important for education, but I also think it's important for life. Because on the one hand, when we live our lives, we do our best to make sense of what we meet in the world. But life breaks through all that. We also encounter things that don't make sense, but that still asks something from us. Other people, the planet. So for me, the question of teaching is a bigger question than just what happens in the classroom. It's also about our relationship to the world outside of us. And I think learning has only emphasized one direction of that relationship. And I think it's really important that we get an appetite for that other direction as well.
Is there a metaphor that captures your view of teaching?
I've written about the gift of teaching. I recently gave a talk somewhere in which I wanted to say a few things about these ideas. And I started with something just to capture the attention of the audience, where I said, I have a theory that there are only two kinds of people, and I have a little test to see in which category you belong. The test is about the answer you give to the question, if someone asks you, what do you want for your birthday? And they say, do you want the voucher or shall I give you a present? And the voucher people, you could say, in a sense, are unable to receive a gift. They want to keep control. So they say, give me a voucher and I'll find something that I like. the people who say, well, give me a gift because I'd love to be surprised. There you can see this other stream happening. For me, this is a nice image of these two directions in engaging with the world outside of us.
I think one of the reasons that learning is particularly seductive to policymakers, and I suppose to lots of people, mm-hmm. is because they would have done a lot of learning themselves informally, perhaps through podcasts, through books, through, you know, informal interactions. So when you say learning is an empty activity, people will say, well, that goes against my own experience because I have learned from reading. Mm-hmm. So how do you respond to that?
Okay, I would say learning is an empty concept. So if you just say I've learned, you actually don't say anything. So when you use the word learning, you always need to specify the content of the learning. And in education, there is also the question of the purpose of the learning. So I'm not saying that learning in itself is empty, but the language of learning without any further specification of what it's about, what it's for, doesn't say a lot. So that's why I object to this idea, the task of the school is to make students learn.
Because it's incomplete.
Yeah, yeah. But it's very prominent in policy and also in a lot of educational research that just says we're looking for the impact of these factors on student learning. And for me, it stops there because I then want to know, well, what kind of learning? Learning that 2 and 2 equals 4? Learning that you're not a nice person? Learning that you're not good at physics? So there is so much that can be learned in the school, but also outside of the school. So that's part of it. And of course, there is a lot to learn for which we don't need the school. So that's why I also get a bit nervous when people say we should call the school a place for learning. And I get nervous because I would already say for a lot of learning, we no longer need the school. The internet provides a lot of opportunities for that. And I'm pretty sure that if we were to ask Google or Apple, can you organize learning for the world? They will say yes, and we can do it much more cheaply, efficiently, quickly than schools. So again, I would say what is important about the school is not that it's a place for learning, but that it's a place where you can encounter teaching, where you can, yeah, where in a sense you open yourself to the things that may come to you that you do not really know what's going to happen there. That's why I would say we still need schools. But for learning, well, I won't do it, but give it to Amazon and they'll fix it.
Well, if we go with that idea, and if there was a loose affiliation of the YouTubes and Amazons and Facebooks and Googles of the world, and they did try to organize learning, what would be missing from the people who engage with it in terms of their education?
I don't know whether you've ever shopped on Amazon, but you order a book and then even before you are in the checkout, they say, people who bought this book also looked at this book. So, and there are algorithms behind that that say, oh, if someone's interested in that, it's quite likely that they're interested in that as well. Now, if those algorithms become educational algorithms, you get a kind of learning that stays very close to sort of where the students move. And again, I would say the whole point of education is that as a teacher, you see a student moving in that direction, and then you make a judgment. And sometimes you say, yeah, that's really important for where the student is, so let's push a bit more in that direction. And sometimes you say, that student has been going there for 7 years now, it's about time that we, yeah, at least point in a different direction. So that raises really important normative questions about, yeah, how would you organize learning online? What is actually the content that you put in front of a student? So I think it can be done, but where current development of software, of online learning programs go, it doesn't go there. It just wants to get you as quickly as possible to a particular endpoint. And when I work with my students, I always start by saying, I have no idea where we will end up. Even if we have all the learning outcomes and everything specified, I still want that to be an open adventure where if suddenly something comes up that I didn't foresee or they didn't foresee, we should be able to pursue that.
That also puts a lot of responsibility on the teacher to be able to not be algorithmic in their approach.
Yeah. Good point. And I think this is partly a question for even the profession of teaching. It's also, of course, a question for teacher education. But I've seen that it very much has become a question for education policy, because there is a belief by some policymakers where they say the only way to get a grip on education is if we make teaching algorithmic, if we make sure that all teachers do the same thing, follow the same protocols. And you see waves of that over time. So when I moved to England about 20 years ago, they were in the middle of the National Literacy and Numeracy Strategy, and that was the literacy hour, literally 60 minutes, and it said you do 5 minutes this, 7 minutes that. So it was completely prescribed. You see that emerging again with ideas of scripted teaching, and that's often informed by particular notions of research that say this is the most effective way to do it. So if you just follow this, then you get the outcomes you want. And what you there see is all kind of attempts to make teaching algorithmic on the assumption that, if you do that, you get the best teaching. The only thing I hardly ever hear is that algorithmic teaching only works if students also become algorithmic. So if you have the model students for the particular proven intervention, then it's all fine. But as soon as you have a student there who says, no, I don't buy this, or I'm not interested, or today I have a headache, then the script falls down.
And that was Professor Gert Biesta from Maynooth University. I'll bring you more from my interview with Gert Biesta on a future programme. But that's all we have time for this week. Remember, you can listen back to this programme or hundreds of others by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on podcasts. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which was published by Routledge, is available from online bookstores. Until the same time next week, goodbye from me, Sean Delaney. Thank you for listening.